You're listening to Rock at Night. Rock at Night, here I come, babe. Rock at Night, just to get some pay. We're ready to love, I'm only this time. A night, a night.
This is Charisse with Rock at Night magazine, and today we are talking with Gray Motzinger of the Ann Arbor grunge band called Tension Splash. I recently saw them perform at the Token Lounge in Westland, Michigan, about a month ago, and I was really impressed with the music. Also, Rock at Night just reviewed their latest release, Blur, so I want to know more about the history. Hi, Gray. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Charisse. How you doing?
I'm doing okay here in Florida. You guys started in the early 1990s. Did you start because of the whole grunge scene in Seattle, or was this an independent grunge scene in Ann Arbor? Tell me about that time period.
Well, I would always like to try to state to people that in the early 90s, even prior up to the early 90s, let's say mid 80s, Ann Arbor was a melting spot already for a base that would become grunge music. Mm-hmm. We were known for the garage bands of Iggy Pop and, and MC5 mm-hmm. and the Stooges and what have you. But at the same time, we had Laughing Hyenas, Wig, and we had a channel of the Touch and Go label bands coming out of Chicago and out of Ann Arbor. So right before grunge broke, we were already in the midst of what we would consider just straight up hard edged rock and roll punk rock. And a lot of us was already in working bands, mm-hmm. and everybody knew each other. Key factor that everybody knew was a guy by the name of Mike Birch, who would wind up being the bass player in Tension Splash. Mike been in a band called Child Time. The brothers one of the guys in Child Time, him and his brothers are the Padlins, who started the Loft Studios and everything else. So, there was this giant connection coming into the 90s already before grunge hit. I mean, it was not uncommon for us to be at the 8-Ball or the Heidelberg just hanging out somewhere shooting darts, after a band practice of our own, and stumble into a Nirvana concert, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Sonic Youth would be playing in our town. Urge Overkill, Babes Toyland, all those bands was playing in our town way before the grunge alternative scene, hit. So when we got together, it was a matter of bands that we were in kind of dissolving in some way or another. And Mike Birch called me up and asked if I was interested in checking out this band with him and these two brothers. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know if we really thought we were going to be a grunge band, so to speak, but that's what was going on at the time. We just got together and started playing some rock and roll. And, naturally, we in the style of what was going on, we had some drop D tuning songs and some, timing songs. But at the same time, we were just four rock and roll kids, barely learning our instruments, To hit it on the nail, though, but like I say, Ann Arbor at that time was already, we went and seen Faith No More, Soundgarden open up for Voivod, mm-hmm. Before that scene even blew up. So it was kind of crazy to see it evolve while we were just evolving ourselves as a band.
So that's interesting. Independently of that whole Seattle scene, you guys were erupting with your own sound, and it's just kind of melded into that. What became Tension Splash, and then Sponge came out too around that time period. It just kind of evolved. During that time period after you formed Tension Splash, did you guys tour or go outside of the area?
Well, yeah. We extensively played. We played Ann Arbor right out the bat. And then we instantly started making our way into the Westland and Detroit area, down in Token Lounge area where we played, during that. And we met bands that were borderlining on the grunge and rock and roll scene at that time, but still in the metal scene down there, because Detroit was still very, very skid row metalish type, mm-hmm. But we were meeting bands that were branching over towards the grunge or alternative side, and we started doing shows with them. And then we met up with some bands right out the gate, we knew some bands in, say, Dayton, Ohio, in the Ohio area, and we were going in and out of Ohio playing shows. But then Tension Splash had a really cool thing happen to us. It was pretty much as soon as we got going, we were playing shows. We got in the studio and immediately recorded. And we put 5 songs down, and we went back and did 3 more and made an 8-song first album, you know, first album, Tension Splash. And we got that out, and we got it into the hands of Kathleen. Let me think of her name for a minute. I'm going to say Kathleen Turner, but I could be wrong. But it might be Kathleen Turner. Anyways, she worked at Rip Magazine. She was a side editor or something at Rip Magazine, but she had a column in Rip Magazine called the Buzz Column, which was for indie bands and unsigned bands to be able to send your stuff in. Well, we sent our tape in, and she reviewed our tape and gave us a pretty good review in Rip Magazine. And before you know it, our mailbox is just flooded daily with people wanting tapes, wanting whatever. So we just started sending out tapes. You know, we send out free tapes with a crayon written letter, you know, to tell them thank you or what have you, you know. And we kind of started building a small fan base that had people calling us and going, hey, we can get you booked in, you know, a bowling alley in, you know, Arkansas. We can get you guys, booked here. So before you know it, we went in and out of Chicago a few times and further into Ohio, on up into the UP, Indiana, you know, anywhere around the tri-state area we could get to and basically get back home at night, you know, we started hitting it. We did everything, you know, at that time in the early 90s, because, you know, as we said, we might talk about some how the stuff goes on there, you know, but in the early 90s, all you could do was play shows and make what you can make money-wise, and then you dumped it right back into your band. Because it was going to cost you, let's say, $1,000, $1,500 to go into the studio at bare minimum. And then he was going to have to turn around and give somebody like World Class Records and Tapes $500 to $1,000 to press you 500, you know, tapes with jackets. So you would be into this project for almost 3G by the time you were done. And you got to turn around and try to make money on this. He never did. We just gave it away most of the time, you know. But that was the whole early 90s scene for us. But, I mean, we traveled all over. We had a Rip Magazine. We made it in a Rip Magazine twice. Somebody wrote back into the fan zone and said how she loved the Buzz column. And bands like Tension Splash that sent her a handwritten letter and a free tape. You know, so, I mean, we had good press going on. And, you know, we were, like I said, we were rubbing elbows at the Kid Rock level when he was breaking in. You know, I knew Sponge before Sponge was Sponge. They were a band called Loud House before they became Sponge. Anywho, you know, we rubbed elbows with all those guys, you know, the Howlin' Diablos. There was all these bands, you know, semi on their way to trying to be famous bands just like us. We were doing everything we could to be the next Pearl Jam, you know, whoever we could be.
I have a question about your discography, because I looked up, there's a 2019 album and then there's a 2025. The 2019, is that basically a remaster of what you guys did in the 1990s?
Yeah. Okay. That's a remastered of probably of all the first songs, which is just called Tension Splash. It's got a picture of some crazy double-headed wizard-looking girl on the front of it. And it was the, like I said, the first 5 songs that we ever wrote, we went right in the studio 3 weeks later and recorded them. And he was able to get back there about a month later and drop the other 3. And it, you know, and it was a tape that we, you know, sold and shipped out, and, you know, and everything. It was in fine condition as it was. But what basically happened was I took the reels back from Mike Hatchek, our bass player. He had all the original reels from when we recorded. And I was hanging with Mike up right up till the day he died, more or less. You know, me and Mike, he lived around the area. I watched him go through all of his good times and all of his bad times. He was in up and down space in his life, you know, and we were always here and he was always around. And but I told him, I need those reels because I don't want my kid, you know, or my kids, my daughter and my son, I don't want them messing with cassette tapes and stuff after I die. Mm-hmm. My kid's already, you know, messing with the board. He knows how to do studio work. Mm-hmm. Let's get the reels to him so he's got them and, you know, he can maybe get them digital. And so when I got them, I went to Padlands myself, me and my kid did. And we got them. We dumped them digitally, got everything digital. And once we went digital, Padlands was able to push just a couple of brand new buttons that these kids have today that made our, you know, made our stuff sound like brand new. You know, I mean, it's, you know, just incredible technology that just cleans it up and boom, it's you're in 1993 again, you know? So we did that first album. Mike was still alive. We got through that first, you know, all those first songs remastered. And the beautiful thing about it was, you know, Soak, as we call it, it's a 4-song EP that we had out already. It's sitting there. So we started messing with it a little bit, but we mainly remastered that first album. But then we found those 4 unfinished songs sitting there. And we knew they were there, but we just didn't know, you know, how they would be, what we could do to them. But as soon as they came through them speakers with all this new technology and paneling, talking about, hey, man, we can this and that and that, I can clean this part up. We can, you know, chop and shorten and fix these parts. We went to work on them, and it was just amazing, you know. But then I'm looking at the feet of, I gotta write basically three new songs of lyrics to sing on a track where I sing and where I sing from 1993 on Scared. Then I gotta sing 3 songs from now in 2024, 2025.
I really like the song Breathe. That's a great song. You're 7:45/Breathe. It's like a 10-minute song.
Yeah.
It's epic.
That's what my dream was. That was my dream for that song. When we wrote that song back in the day, we actually played that song 1 or 2 times live back in the early, you know, early mid-90s, just before we, you know, just before we went into hiatus. That would be in our lineup every once in a while. And so when it was there, it was my dream to get that one done in its entirety the way that I wanted it. 7:45 to bleed.
So everything that you recorded in recent years, you performed it how you did back in the day. You're in the same mindset, even though you're, you know, we're talking, what, 30 years later or whatever.
30 years later. Yeah, Breed was always meant to be, I ain't never really wanted to be too political or too radical or too crazy and get myself in where I'm having to debate stuff with, you know, with so-called people who think they know stuff. But to me, Breathe was always a simple statement as what it is. Everybody out here think you know something. Everybody think you got some space to worry about. Everybody thinks, you know, that this world is controlled by everything that you think is controlled by. And it ain't controlled by shit. Mm-hmm. The only thing we all have is breathing. And the minute you stop that, it's over. You know, so that's, you know, when I was writing Breathe back then, that was the meaning behind it. And when I brought it back to life here, that was the exact meaning behind it. Was that you people do not have no understanding of the world you live in and what everything around you is so meaningless compared to just that one thing you do each day. And you share that with everything on this planet.
We'll be right back.
It's interesting because that probably is even more relevant now since Mike passed. You
Oh,
know, the meaning of today, what's really important, really what matters, people, love, you know, humans, things
dang.
like that.
Because you don't know. You don't know.
Yeah.
It was 5 years ago to the date when we played that Token Lounge show that I got a phone call waking up from a camping trip where we do this yearly camping trip, me and my kid, where we go play the show. I'm waking up and to a phone call that, he's dead. I just talked to him a week prior to that. Now I'm waking up to find out he's dead. And died in his mom's house.
That show was really poignant because you had the picture of him on stage, and I felt it was really an emotional performance.
We froze there for a minute, but I think I caught what you said.
I really felt his presence, though. I felt like the music was brought back to life and that he was really there in spirit, and you made sure that he was there in spirit.
Oh, yeah. I went and got that. I wanted to do a life-size cutout of them. That got harder and harder to put together.
Yeah.
So I just went and got that smaller picture put up, of them. My kid grew up with them. So my kid playing bass, he took it to heart and he learned all that stuff to the note. I mean, it was pretty amazing when he come over for practice the first time. We were all just kind of like shell-shocked to hear him just throw it down. It was like bass, Mike's bass. He's playing Mike's bass. It was like Mike was in. It was amazing. So yeah, we.
I'm sure it was an honor for him to play bass, you know, in his place. He's kind of like an uncle in a sense, if he, you
Oh,
know,
he
you
is.
guys all knew each other and
Oh, he is. My kid grew up with him. My kid, Mike was in my kid's life his whole life. Grayson ain't never known, it was a big hit.
well, you guys have been doing performances live now. Are you going to continue?
Well, I guess that's kind of the plan. It's right now. I talked to Sean yesterday. He really wants to come back in January and go back into the studio and work on the four songs from Soak. We'd kind of like to remaster those to the same level as what we just did for Blur and put out a combo album of, Soak Blur. And so he really wants to focus on that. I said, well, we want to hit a show in January. He said, well, if we think we got time, we will. If not, I'd rather focus on that and then do big show again in the summertime. But it sounds like both guys are still interested in doing some more shows. They're professors. They're busy guys. I'm just a slacker at Ford Motor Company in my last couple of years. I'm gonna retire here as soon as I can. I stay busy as I can playing music with my kid. We got a crazy little cover band and we play, once or twice a month. But anytime new guys are ready, I'm ready to do Tension Splash shows, at the drop of a hat. So I'm hoping that it turns back into a more regular routine. I mean, we got to wait for somebody to get in from Vermont. We got traveling situations, but still.
Well, there's festivals there. Isn't there like a harvest festival in October that they do
Yeah,
in
he's all kind
Detroit or something like that?
like I said, I got to deal with two guys that are like working around, teaching kids, one a history professor, one a music professor. So their schedules work around, spring breaks, winter breaks, summer breaks, and when they get breaks, they call me up and we all get together and we work on Tension Splash stuff.
Did they continue in bands too after the band went on hiatus or whatever?
No. Them guys, all three were like more, college kids, came from families with, backgrounds, and you're going to do something and you're going to do it right because here's all the money we saved in the world for you to go to school with. So we were in like a time capsule there for a minute with Tension Splash that was like running out. So by about 96, all of those guys was like, hey, we got to shit or get off the pot here, man.
Yeah.
Our parents are kicking us and saying, you got to get some real jobs going, dudes. This rock and roll thing ain't quite, quite working out. Me, I come from a long line of, factory workers. My mom's sitting there with the Ford application just waiting for me to, say, yeah, I'm ready for it, But those guys all had to go get real jobs, and they one by one started showing up with their haircut, and business cards because they were going to, either they were going to grad school and training for this, or then I got a real job, and next thing
Well,
here
you
we.
know what? Ford Motor Company is a real job too.
Oh,
I come from a line of auto workers.
I know it's a real job. It took
You
care of me.
know, we're union people, and
Yep, same
so
here.
that's, you know, but it comes a time, you know, when you're in your 20s or whatever, you start pushing 30, people start getting girlfriends and wives, and then you have everybody just buckles down, I think. And, you know,
well, I was always the serious cat right out the gate. Whenever I met these guys, I was already a kitchen manager at a Pizzeria Uno's in downtown Ann Arbor. I had me, you know, a 9-to-5 job. I was already married. Mm-hmm. My wife had a job. We, you know, we had an apartment. Mm-hmm. Shortly, you know, halfway through our, you know, tender of being Tension Splash, I had a daughter on the way, you know. So I was already in the game, you know.
Yeah, life happens. And I'm seeing that with a lot of bands in the area where they come back together in their 40s and 50s and they revisit the music, the youth that they had, and they sound just as great, you know, like no time has passed. And
it was a couple of good weeks of work to get that put together to make that sound good. But, you know, it felt so good. It felt like, you know, it did feel like 1990s again, you know. Yeah. Here we are back in the basement, you know. We're a little older now and our habits have changed a little bit. We're not as wild as we was, but here we are again, you know, downstairs somewhere making music together.
Is there anything that you would want people to know about Tension Splash before we say goodbye? Anything about the band or the history that nobody's ever talked about?
You know, I mean, we were a pretty open band out there. We didn't really like have no big secrets or no really big downfalls of any insanity. We were just a regular rock and roll band, you know, blue collar, you know, kids out there kicking it. Probably, you know, the biggest thing anybody could take away from us is we were true best friends. We never, you know, it wasn't about a business. It wasn't about a strive to be rock stars. Of course, that was our dream. But to us, we were the best of friends. We were the best of buddies. We were brothers. Ended up being family. You know, everybody knows everybody's kids. You know, anytime we're together, we're still together for the fact that we're friends before we're anything else. That's how Tension Splash came together. I showed up just to check it out. One audition with Sean and Hatcheck. The next day, Nick showed up. The third day, we're naming ourselves Tension Splash. A week later, we're playing a show. And then from there on, it was nothing but every day together, every weekend together, out on the weekends with the girlfriends for dinner, you know, just an extensive family. So everything you think about us is true. If you look at us, you think we're the best of friends and brothers, we are.
I felt the chemistry when I saw you guys and everybody harmonized so well. It was like no time had passed. And I could feel the love between you all.
Yeah.
As a spectator.
we don't miss time talking to each other. We don't miss time trying to get together, you know. I mean, you know, the whole time when Sean moved out of town, me and Nick, we'd still get together with our families, have big, huge cookouts, you know. Hatcheck would be there. I mean, the whole time. As soon as Sean got to town, it would be a big cookout, big family getting together. I'd set up equipment in my basement. We'd all play. Mm-hmm. The kids would sit around, you know, and look at us and go, wow, our old men can play guitars, you know, rock and roll. You know? So, I mean, yeah, we ain't been nothing but the family since we started this band. And that's why we're still doing it now. You want to know why we come out of this after 30 years of not doing it? For the love of who we used to be and the love of what we did. And the fact that we're still brothers now.
Thanks so much for speaking to me, Gray. And well, I hope to see you guys play again when I get up to Michigan. I'll be up there in a couple of weeks, but I do go back and forth.
All right.
You're listening to Rock at Night.